I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, grayer still over North London after that result. We're going to get into that. We'll obviously get into Juventus winning the Coppa Italia. We'll talk into Chelsea getting another win. Who'd have thunk it? And how about your man Eric Ten Hag? That was cool. But we got to start at the Tottenham Stadium. You all know, presumably, what the setup was. City needed to win to move ahead of Arsenal going into the last weekend of the season, last 90 minutes. As things stand, City have a two-point lead over Arsenal, which means that if they equal or better Arsenal's result, they will become champions, come what may. However, Arsenal still have a better goal difference, which means that if City draw or lose and Arsenal win, Arsenal become champions.
That's right.
Now, we kind of want to, I guess everybody's going to know what this is heading into Sunday. I hope we don't get some crappy, damp squib. Manchester City are playing West Ham, and Arsenal are playing
Everton.
Everton. There you go. Everton, two mid-table sides, and Everton would be mid-table if not for the points penalty. Nothing to ask for.
Yeah.
I hope it gets exciting. And here's a reason why it might. Here's the stat that I found all by myself. Manchester City have played 18 home games in the Premier League this season, right? They have drawn 5 of those 18 games.
Yeah.
4 of those games that they've drawn have been against London clubs. There's only 6 London clubs.
Yeah.
5 of them have been there. 4 out of 5 have drawn at the Etihad. West Fulham is the only one who hasn't. West Ham, unless I'm mistaken, are very much a London club to the point that they play at the London Stadium, right? They're perhaps the most London club. So maybe Davy Moyes? No? No, but I'm saying it's not a foregone conclusion, right?
But no, but whether it was a London club or a Manchester club or a Liverpool club, it would not matter. You would go and say...
City are favourites.
Can City drop points against West Ham or against whoever they would play this weekend at home on Sunday where they have to win? They've done it before. They've never lost it in that position. They won away at Brighton when they had to. They beat Aston Villa 2 years ago. Even if they were 2-0 down with 15 minutes to go, they still managed to do it. It might not be straightforward. It might be a bit tense at times, but there's no way City are not beating West Ham on Sunday.
All right, you heard it here. Famous last words here.
Yeah.
Famous last words from Joel. I think it's possible. I think it's football. I think a lot of weird stuff can happen. I want to talk about the game itself against Spurs because I thought, you know, we talked about how when Arsenal played Liverpool at the weekend, it was like, all right, no frills, eyes on the prize.
United,
let's remain let's remain super concentrated, not screw this up. And I feel like City went into the Spurs game in the same way. That was one of those games where we did not necessarily see a lot of daring attacking patterns, none of the stuff that we often see. We just saw a lot of focus. And then Kevin De Bruyne kind of ghosts away from the defender, creates space for himself, and sets up Haaland early in the second half.
Yeah.
But it was very professional. And then the second goal came, you know, in garbage time from Haaland.
It was interesting to hear Pep after the game saying the first half we were not good because there was too much nerves, that the players were too nervous. Because you think, and we've said it, that it's been one of the narratives, City will win this title and this title race because they've been there before, they saw experience in title races. And yet, even Pep says that first half at Spurs, we were not ourselves. It was much better in the second half because that first half, they were very nervous. And it's human beings, he said, and it's normal.
Some superstition maybe too, given the record at that stadium.
Maybe, but it's true that they were not good in the first half. And to be fair, that goal, as good as the movement from De Bruyne is, the cross, the tap-in for Haaland, it's mistakes defensively by Spurs to let that Foden cross, for example, go through their box.
Right.
Even not nobody picks up the run from De Bruyne, and I think Vicario should do much better because everybody in the whole world knew exactly what De Bruyne would do, and yet it's still gone past Vicario.
Vicario did make some good saves.
Well, on Foden, the first one was
outstanding. Yes, just to balance it out with the Italian guy.
No, yes.
Spurs obviously also had a bunch of people missing. The other big narrative from this is that there's two other big points, which we'll get into more in the Gavin Jules podcast. One is Heung-Min Son missing a one-on-one. That is literally the one-on-one.
It's the defining moment of the season.
Which defines the season.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have a go. It's on for all the reasons. Other one, Ange Postecoglou, visibly annoyed with the fact that a lot of Tottenham fans, you know, we're singing, like, after they concede the goal, he starts singing, "Are you watching Arsenal?" And it's almost like they seemed like more intent. I know we could be overrating this narrative a little bit. More intent on stopping Arsenal from winning the title. I mean, that's called
them
a rivalry.
Winning the game themselves, yeah.
Yeah, well, and ultimately winning, yeah, they're winning the games themselves.
He said after the game, in the last 48 hours, it told me so much about the mentality of the club inside and outside, or something similar like that. What do you think he meant? He had a go at a fan, like, properly pointed out, like, you know, you and this and that during the game behind his bench. One, why was he so angry? And two, what do you think he meant by, like, I've learned a lot from the mentality inside this club in the 48 hours leading to the game?
So I think there's two separate narratives going on here. One is simply the rivalry aspect. I think he, before the game, he was genuinely annoyed by it. I think he got more annoyed during the game. I don't know that he realized to what degree a portion of the crowd, but maybe a noisy portion of the crowd, were going to go and kind of
wish for the team to lose. Yeah.
And I think part of it is the night before, Liverpool and Villa had drawn, right? Spurs at this point had nothing to play for, right?
No, they could still do it. Had they won, but, or even drawn, they would still be in for the Champions League.
But in reality,
yeah, it would be unlikely, but they were still.
I think they had given up hope. And this thing is, it's funny. It's an age-old thing, and it happens when there's really fierce rivalries. It is part of the culture of football, where if you are a Joe Schmo Tottenham fan, you're like, okay, so maybe we draw against City, doesn't really help us. I mean, we even beat City, so what? We're still going to suck, right? We've been bad. We've had these injuries. We got nothing out of this season, but we get the joy of making fun of Arsenal. We get these local bragging rights. They, you know, they have a go at us about St. Tottenham's Day, and we go back at them about something else, and blah, blah, blah. I think this is a normal part of some European, and I think South American too, actually, fan culture. It really is. It is a natural part of that. And sometimes it's, I mean, I remember having this conversation with Paolo Di Canio many years ago, died in the wool Lazio fan, right? And it used to drive him bananas, where people derived more joy from their direct rivals screwing up than they did from their own team winning. Mm. I think part of it happens to teams that haven't won a lot, and this might be to tie it back to what Ange gets. I mean, let's say, if you're a Spurs fan or an Arsenal fan, you really haven't had that much to cheer in the last, 10 years?
Yeah.
Right? Maybe more, actually. So it's the way you live the sport is by getting one over on your rival. I don't know if Ange is intelligent enough to think he understands that, but I think it just bugs him, that mentality. It really angers him. And I think that is what drove him to act the way he did.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. I mean,
you're a Paris Saint-Germain fan. Do you rejoice every time Red Star Paris?
But I would never want my team to lose, though. I really don't understand.
Because you don't have a direct rival.
No, but it doesn't matter. So let's say, like, you know, PSG would play against, I don't know, any team in France, and beating them would mean that Marseille would potentially win the title. I still would not want my team to win. And I think what Ange maybe meant, and especially, I thought he was very good in his pre-match press conference, when he said, you know, I've walked through here, and I can't see any trophies in the trophy cabinet or something. He said something like that about trophies that Spurs have not won, obviously. And I thought his point was like, we can't be a small club. We can't have a small club mentality. If we want to become a big club and winning the league, winning the Champions League, we need to act like, we need to have that kind of mentality. And big clubs' mentality are not, let's lose this game almost on purpose, so it denies somebody else winning the title, somebody else who are our rivals. If you have a big club mentality, you play to win every game.
Yeah.
Whether that serves Arsenal or not, whether that serves Chelsea or not, and your biggest rivals, it doesn't matter so much. Especially when you're facing Pep Guardiola and Manchester City. Because, let's say, Spurs had battered City on Tuesday night, right? maybe psychologically coming into next season, if this Spurs team is very good and is competing with City to win the title, and you get to game week 37 on the league, and again City are going back to Tottenham in a game where Spurs can actually win the title, we would talk about, oh, remember last season City came and they got battered by Spurs, all of that. I think the habit of winning and winning big matches against big opponents is very important. And that's clearly what I think he was
agreeing. I take your point. I mean, the little wrinkle in this one is, I think the last three or four times that City went to Tottenham, they lost.
Yeah, but that was Ange was not the manager.
Okay, that's fine. But I think sometimes more than one thing can be true. I think from the club, I think people have roles in football, right? From the club's perspective, I 1,000% endorse what Ange says. It's true for the players. It's true for the club. You have to have that big club mentality. You can't say, oh, look, at least Arsenal don't win the title. Fine. From the perspective of the fans, I tread pretty cautiously here.
Yeah.
They're the ones who pay the bills. They're the ones who are going to be there when Ange is gone. They'll even be there when Levy's gone, if he ever goes away. They're entitled to live their fan experience any way they want. True. And if they have zero faith that the club are going to do anything, so then they can say, like, oh, look, the reality is I'd rather Arsenal lose than, you know, we take a little baby step or we're going to get knocked back again. If they have zero faith, it's your job as club to build them back up again. That's what you are paid for. So I am not going to have a go at fans who feel that way. Players, obviously, is a different story. But again, the players, I mean, how many of those guys are actually Spurs fans or grew up as Spurs fans, right? Not many, right?
No, but they also, they might have interaction with Spurs fans and, you know, it'd be, I don't know.
In the real world, I don't think it happens so much. Would have been interesting if Harry Kane had still been there, given that, of course, he did grow up as an Arsenal fan when he was very little.
Or at least
he played for Arsenal when he was very little. But that's a whole other story. A lot of people have read this mentality argument as, and I guess this is the second part of the question that you're asking is, uh-oh, is this shades of Antonio Conte and Jose Mourinho?
Some people have pointed out that that's exactly what Conte could have said, exactly what Ange said Tuesday.
He probably would have. I think where it's different is that you might see a parallel there, but I think Conte is much closer to Mourinho in his outlook than Ange.
Yeah.
So they can agree on this one point about mentality and so on. For me, from Conte and Mourinho, very clearly, what this means is, all right, cut some more checks, bring in better players. From Ange, that's not the vibe I got.
I think he was making
a point about mentality, about how they really needed that stadium to lift them on the night, and how, like, if you're on the pitch and you hear your own fans singing, are you watching Arsenal when you just conceded a goal? That can be pretty soul-destroying, right? These are humans out there. I think this is what he was referring to.
Yeah.
It's
been such a fascinating season for him, really, with the incredible start and then, you know, hitting more troubles, to trying to find ways, to then being very angry the last few weeks.
Yeah.
He hasn't been happy. I mean, they lost 5 of the last 6 Premier League games. They only won 1 against Burnley, and that was not nice.
No.
And that was not great. Really interesting.
And the range of injuries as well, of course, that he had, which I think hit them very, very hard. One other point to make on this is the clash between Romero and Ederson, which left Ederson down for a long time. Then he got up, then he played on for a few minutes, and then they took him off. Now, well, first of all, there's two things to say. One, I was watching on television, but the commentator's like, oh, Ederson is furious at having to come off. And I'm like, how do you know he's angry at that? Or how do you know he's not just angry at the fact that I hit my head and I might be concussed, I might be seriously injured? I always wonder about that, right? How do you take it as read that Ederson wanted to play on? I mean, you've got the adrenaline, whatever. I do wonder about this, and there are concussion protocols or whatever. I don't understand. The doctors go out, they look at him, you know, they mess around with him for a couple minutes, and they go off the pitch. He keeps playing, so presumably he's fine to continue playing. And then what? Like, from the bench, they see him and they say, oh, wait, maybe there's something wrong with him?
Or maybe he's signaled, like, he said, like, I can't continue?
To me, this is very open and shut.
He looked to be shaken, to be fair.
He looked shaken. People have called for a long time having independent medical assessments.
Yeah.
I think the reality, and they do this, of course, in the NFL, for example, in concussion situations. The thing is that I am not a doctor, but the independent medical assessments, leaving aside the pressure and stuff that they're under, they're still going to be like, they take like a good 15 minutes.
Mm.
So either we go down the temporary substitution route, which I think is a possibility.
Yeah, for concussions, yeah.
But I don't want to see what I saw there. Because I'm sorry, these two dudes who ran on, right, and you're looking at his eyes and doing whatever. Again, I don't want to question your but I cannot imagine being put, I mean, you come from a medical background, well, and since your dad's a doctor, I can't imagine the responsibility that is on you, on the pitch, to have to send somebody else out there.
Yeah. We've discussed it many times before. Really, it has to be an independent doctor coming to assess those players who have been concussed.
And a temporary substitution. So you send Ortega on for 15 minutes.
Exactly.
And then if the doctor says he's totally fine, send him back on. I'm surprised there isn't...
It's quite simple, I think. It's quite easy to do.
I'm surprised there isn't some, I don't know, brain scan doodad that you can go and put them in and look at, or maybe that's not how you assess
concussion. I don't know. I'm not
You're the doctor. You're more the doctor than I am.
Yeah, but... I don't know. I think there is ways of checking it, even without a scan.
Beyond, follow MRI. My finger, follow my finger.
Yeah, but and also I think time is one.
Right.
So that's why you need to give it a few more minutes. But yeah, I think Hugo Lloris talked about that when he was concussed a few years ago and wanted to stay on and stayed on, but now admits himself he should have never been allowed to stay on the pitch. It's again, I think it's an easy one to sort out, and yet still nothing is done about it.
Yeah, I remember Christoph Kramer after the World Cup 2014.
Mm.
He said he doesn't remember
he
what
remember
happened.
Anything?
Hopefully this is another opportunity to look at it. Hopefully Ederson's fine. Shout out to Ortega, who I saw played well after coming.
He got man of the match, which is a very subjective thing. It's the co-coms who gives it. But to make so the 1-7 Kulusevski, the first one, okay, it's a bit at him, but he goes down very quickly, so the ball doesn't go between his legs. Okay, the one on Son. I think Son made the wrong choice in here. He should have gone straight in front of him instead of trying to go across Ortega the way he hit the ball. But it's still an amazing save. It's a save like Martinez on Colomwani in the World Cup final. If you look at it, it's a similar position. It's as obviously decisive as the one from Martinez on Colomwani, maybe even more for the title race, I mean. But incredible. When you've come on into a game like this and have such a massive impact, it's incredible. And you know, on Monday we said about there hadn't been really one defining moment this season, like the Compagnie goal against Leicester, like the John Stones clearance on the line at Liverpool.
Yeah.
Remember those kind of moments where in a few years' time you said, oh, remember that Vinny goal, remember that Stones clearance, and now everybody is going to say in 5 years, 10 years, remember that Ortega save on Son. And that this is the moment. This is the moment for me where City won the title, and this is the most defining moment of the season.
I wonder if he's going to start at the weekend.
There's a case to say, like, if it's concussion, really, it's 7 days, so Ederson cannot play on Sunday.
I would, if I were again, and I say this about all players everywhere, I never understand. Obviously, you have to have faith in your club doctor, but I would advise, if I were an agent or a player, I would say, you know what, I can afford it. I'm going to go see my own independent specialist as well to assess me.
Which
I hope he does. I hope he does. Ortega, incidentally, just a year left after this one. I think, given he's in his early 30s now, I think he may want to move on this summer because he's not going to be Allison's old time, long-term replacement.
Ederson, yeah.
Sorry, Ederson's or Allison's.
Yeah.
Presumably he wants to play. I think so.
But again, you go into the, like, would you rather be a backup and still play? He would have played 10 games, I think, this season.
For you want to be City. Raymond van der Gaal?
No. But no, it's different. It's different because he plays a little bit, not much, but a little bit. Or go to a mid-table club and play every single game, but with nothing, probably be on less money.
He was in a bad club for much of his career.
Yeah, true. But that's why I think now that he's tasted troubles and winnings and still kind of playing a bit, if that's still better than going back to a team that will finish 14th and you play every game, but is it that rewarding compared to City? Not so sure.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/GAB right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Tell them I sent you. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Manchester United without a striker to speak of. Rashford and Hoyland both on the bench. Jules, take that. They beat Newcastle 3-2. This game was pretty wide open.
It was pretty wide open, especially, let's be honest here, from Newcastle towards the United goal.
First goal, Jules, help me. Help me on the first goal.
It's just pure luck. Ahmad, the ball from Ahmad is not for Mainoo. It happens that he falls onto Mainoo, and then it's a decent finish.
But why is there nobody within 10 yards of Mainoo?
Well, so he makes his run late and, you know, deep into the box. And I think Ahmad takes too long to play him, first of all. Then, obviously, I think it's Murphy covering or Trippier covering and doesn't push forward enough to play him offside. And then the ball somehow ends up to it. But I still think the Gravka should do better because the Mainoo shot is not even in the bottom corner. I mean, I think the Gravka should have been better on the Haaland goal as well, by the way. And Newcastle had chances. It's a good win for United. Of course it is, especially after the defeat at the weekend against Arsenal. I thought a draw probably would have been a fair result. But well done to them.
Diallo's goal was a bit special, though. Can we get excited about that?
And I thought he played well. And
yeah,
we showed, which we've been saying for a long time, that he should have played more this season than what he did. And, guys, Premier League clubs will vote on June the 6th on whether to scrap VAR or not, following a proposal from Wolves, who, as we know, have been very unhappy with VAR this season. I guess decisions like the penalty that was not given for a foul of Amrabat on Anthony Gordon will only fuel the fire.
Yeah, I mean, that was 1,000% a penalty.
Yeah.
If you had a chance to see Anthony Gordon talking after the game, and he's like, me sock, I didn't have me sock anymore, which is his way of saying he didn't have his sock anymore because he's a bit scouse. I don't understand. I cannot follow this. This is where, if you're Howard Webb, you know, if he had any hair, he would lose it. You know, this is where you go and you pummel your VAR, saying like, dude, what the hell are you looking at?
I know.
Do your freaking job. This is so obvious. And this frustrates people. But on the other hand, does it mean that we need to get rid of VAR? No. I don't see how the two things are related. You can make better use of it. It's not VAR's fault that they screwed this up. You can make those mechanisms better. Like, I don't think this is going to pass. It takes 14 votes out of 20. There's no way they're going to get the 14 votes out of 20. I think especially part of the reason VAR was introduced, incidentally, is that VAR, without VAR, put it this way, bigger clubs tend to get more of the calls for obvious reasons, right? So why smaller clubs like Wolves, or mid-table clubs, I should say, in Wolves' case, would make this argument is frankly beyond me. PGMOL, they say that correct decisions have gone up from 82% to 96% with VAR. I got to say, that 82% figure without VAR is pretty shockingly bad.
It is.
And whatever, it's whichever way that they benchmark it. No, but this is serious. Like I said, if you have a philosophical opposition to VAR because you don't like the game stopping, blah, 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 fine. But there's no footballing decision
Yeah, I agree.
There's no footballing reason to get rid of VAR.
I agree. There's things you can improve, like you said, like the length sometimes of that it takes to make a decision or to get to a decision.
And the transparency as well. People understand it better. Like here, I think people want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Jules, I can't resist. What did you make of Erik ten Hag after the game at Old Trafford coming onto the pitch with his microphone?
Yeah.
And
thanking
supporters.
The fans for the support.
But to be fair to him, he's right. The level of support Old Trafford and United fans have given the club.
Yeah, home and away.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, considering how bad the season has been, how average the season has been, has been really, really good and really important. So he was right. He also said we're going to do everything we can to bring the FA Cup back home, back here, which again, you expected him to say that. I like the fact that he took the mic and addressed the crowd and everybody, and he got the right reception too. Let's see what happens on Sunday, where they finish in the league to start with, and then what happened the following weekend in the FA Cup final. You know what I think about it.
Yes, we don't need to
So
know.
Seeing him talking hasn't changed anything in my head. More United, Gab. The Guardian reports that the club have reached out to Ipswich manager Kieran McKenna, who was previously an assistant under Jose Mourinho and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Would it make sense to you if they were going for him and sack Ten Hag and get McKenna in?
I mean, first of all, I think that's the only circumstance in which if I'm Kieran McKenna, I'm coming to the club. I'm not coming back to be Ten Hag's assistant.
That's not even a conversation.
Right. He's had two straight promotions at Ipswich, reportedly. So, by all means, talk to him. If you legitimately haven't made a decision on Ten Hag, you are going through the process. I'd do so in double quick time because obviously then Ipswich are going to say, oh, look, you got a new contract. It's going to cost you a lot of money if you want our Kieran McKenna. Dude's 38, but he knows the club. Why not? Real Madrid beat up Alaves 5-0 as Vinicius scores twice. I think other than Rudiger for Nacho, this was pretty much a lineup that will start the Champions League final, at least if I were in charge, with maybe Tchouaméni in place of Camavinga fit.
Yeah, he's a bit in a race against time, Tchouaméni with his metatarsal injury to make it. I don't think he will, to be honest. He's still hoping. He's still hopeful. It would be a blow, of course, a loss if he could not make it. But, you know, I think he also has the Euros in the back of his mind and you don't want to come back and rush here and rush anything. So we will have to see. Very good professional performance from a Real Madrid team that is really flying at the moment. So
two games to play. Do you play the reserves next weekend?
You mix next weekend? Yeah, you mix it, I think. You mix it. The your starting 11, whether you
have the chemistry anyway.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So okay. Juventus beats Atalanta 1-0 to win the Coppa Italia. Gab, they deserved.
They did. I thought Juventus played really well. They went in there with the right spirit. I thought we saw the best of Vlahovic. And I'll say this about Vlahovic. He's second in Serie A in goals this season. I think he has 16 plus some in the cup.
Yeah, 19 in total, I think.
Or
23.
Had a bad start to the season, had his injuries, was caught up in the whole, dire way Juve played. But he's coming on very strong. And he's coming on very strong, I think, and looking really physically right just in time for the Euro. So watch the space with him. Beyond that, they hit the woodwork with Miretti. Lukman had the woodwork result. Right, should have had a penalty. The Kenan Yildiz should have been a red when he gets stomped on. Vlahovic also scored a great goal, which was marginally offside. Yeah, congratulations to Juve.
I mean, Juve scoring early.
It certainly helps.
Help them, and then they could defend quite
well. But I asked myself, look, you played well. You executed well. Why can't you do this all year?
Yeah, Scamacca being suspended for Atalanta was a massive blow.
Paris Saint-Germain beat Nice 2-1, and Mbappe's on the bench. But it's the other Mbappe. Ethan. Jules, any truth to the reports in Le Parisien that he has badly fallen out with Nasser Al-Khelaifi, and this kind of is dragging on?
Yeah. So we know they've been a meeting, whether they met before the Toulouse game. Our sources, our ESPN sources, said that it was quite an animated conversation, but only a conversation. Le Parisien saying it's a proper clash. They literally raised their voice and it got pretty bad. Others are a bit in between, or more towards us than the full clash that Le Parisien are reporting.
Le Parisien wrote that the walls were shaking.
Yeah, now, it was really bad.
Okay, but this is a French figure of speech, right? I presume the walls at the Parc des Princes aren't made of cardboard. and Nasser Al-Khelaifi and Kylian Mbappe aren't strong enough.
No, it's just like an image to say that they shouted at each other.
Okay, all right.
Which again, everybody else is reporting something slightly less, you know, less of importance. So,
but he didn't go to Nice to support his teammates because he has a boo-boo?
Yeah, apparently, yeah, he had a little injury. I mean, Luis Enrique said he doesn't want to take any risks now before the French Cup final, which will be in 10 days. So there's one more league game coming up this weekend, of course, in Ligue 1, and then it will be the Cup final. So that's why a lot of the players, and also Luis Enrique was not too happy with the last game against Toulouse, so he left a lot of them at home and played the B team that beat Nice with a great Bradley Barcola, who should be called up by Deschamps and France for the Euros.
This is less of a B team tonight than the team that lost to Toulouse. Right?
Yeah, true.
Right, true.
Back to Juventus, Max Allegri got himself sent off, Gabby, in injury time. He took off his tie and threw it and everything. And then he dropped the biggest hint that he would be leaving in the summer. I guess you disapprove.
Yeah, when somebody acts like a complete ass on the sideline, yeah, of course I do. In injury time, when you're ahead 1-0, he took his jacket off, he threw it off, his shirt was all messed up. At one point, he like turned around like a wild man, his jaw clenched. Then after he got sent off, he called out Rocchi, who's the head of the Italian referees. Afterwards, they all kissed and made up, like he was all normal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
What made him so angry?
I think it was the refereeing decisions went against him. He may have had a point, but when you're 1-0 up, Atalanta can score at any minute, right? It's deep in injury time. Don't get yourself sent off and leave your team without a coach in injury time. Why run the risk like that? He also dropped, he corrected himself. But the way he was talking afterwards made it pretty clear that he's leaving. He also had a run-in with the local paper in Turin, accusing them of always taking the club side. John Elkann spoke afterwards, and he kept going back to this theme of, all the young players at the club. My guess is more sales, more young players, definitely less Allegri next year. Certainly that's the impression we're getting.
Yeah.
This was back on Monday, but Liverpool and Aston Villa battled to a 3-3 draw at Villa Park, which means Villa have now qualified for the Champions League. Some love for Unai Emery and the Villains, please.
Incredible season, Gab. Let's not forget the semi-final of the Conference League too.
They would probably want to forget that semi-final.
But it's still good to finish in the last four of a European competition, back in that top European Cup for 41 years. There's a lot of Villa fans who've never seen them play in the Champions League or the European Cup before.
The last time they were in it was the year after they actually won it,
Yeah, so great for that generation. Amazing. They deserve it. They deserve to be in the top four this season. They've been the fourth best team in the league, really. So amazing work from him and all his team. And again, there's a lot of his people on his staff and in key positions at the club, which is fine with me. Let's see what they do in the summer, if they have to sell before buying, if they can buy, even if they don't sell. Be very interesting, because they also need to strengthen to be good in the Champions League. And next season, as we know, it's a different format. There will be more games for them. And as well, keep improving in the league, or at least staying at the same level, that kind of top four level. So big, big season ahead. Four wins on the bounce now for Chelsea and Mauricio Pochettino, who beat Brighton 2-1. Gab, away from home. You have to admit, this seemed unthinkable not that long ago.
It definitely was unthinkable. I mean, they might even finish fifth, potentially, which is pretty remarkable.
They are 3 points behind Spurs with a game to go. Medical difference.
Yeah, look, it's also that they've faced teams that were all kind of imploding late in the season, from Spurs to West Ham. But you still have to beat them. Tremendous header from Cole Palmer.
Yeah.
There's very few things this guy can't do. I do wonder at one point, like, I know it's kind of, nobody talks about it, but City, I think, really regret this one. I think they could have actually really used him. At the end, Reece James gets himself sent off. He came off the bench. It's second. He's been sent off already this season. I think it was back in November. Echoes of Lauren James for England in the Women's World Cup, his sister. Yeah, you don't need to see that. You need more calm. It'll happen with younger players, but he's got to be a leader.
My boy Nkunku scoring as well.
And nice to see him back too.
Yeah.
Your boy Antoine Griezmann bags a hat-trick as Atletico Madrid romp past Getafe 3-0. With Athletic Bilbao upset by Celta Vigo on Tuesday, it means they're back in the Champions League next season.
Yeah, well done, even if they can probably be a bit disappointed by the season and how it went, and to finish fourth where they are now. is still that important for them financially to qualify for the Champions League next season. And again, Griezmann, everything's good about them comes from him anyway. Plenty of reports out there in Germany, Gab, that Bayern have changed their mind and want to keep Thomas Tuchel after 99 different managers turned them down in recent days. What do you make of it?
I think it would be an absolute joke and a farce and a freak show if they change their mind.
But Xavi stayed.
I will see about that, but I think Xavi's a completely different situation than Bayern. Xavi wasn't actually sacked by the club. This is all comes to the fact that his agent, Olaf Meinking, was seen speaking to Max Eberl, the sporting director, and Jan-Christian Driessen, and Christoph Freund at the training ground. I don't know. Maybe they're talking about him clearing out his locker. I don't know. More likely, if this is out there, it could be maybe to turn the screws a little bit on Hansi Flick, who is still in the frame, has not said no yet. But I mean, this would just be an absolute shock, and I don't know what would warrant it, frankly. Also back on Monday, Barcelona beat Real Sociedad 2-0. They're away to Almeria in a few hours, but Jules, second place seems all but locked up.
Yeah, and it was not the easiest of wins. I don't think they played that great, but with Girona losing on Tuesday night against Villarreal as well, and we know how important it is for Barcelona to finish second, even just, for example, to be involved in the Spanish Super Cup and get a few millions of euros there, they would take everything, really. So if Xavi can take this team into finishing second after the season that they had, and he said again how complicated things were for people to really realise that it's not going to be a fun summer, it's not going to be a good one either, then at least if you finish second, that kind of softened the blows a little bit of what's coming next.
You referenced him staying before.
Well, no, he said himself that he stayed, but now it seems there's more and more
I don't understand this. I don't understand what's changed. I mean, unless they go to him and they say, please stay because we can't afford to sign anybody else competent and you love the club. But all those other things that he talked about, the stresses, the lack of respect, the family, none of that's changed, right?
No, but
this is what I struggle with.
Yeah, but
I say this to somebody who loves
I know, but he's agreed now to stay, so he's not going to change his mind again and decide because
I'm just really surprised by that.
That he decided to stay.
I hope he's okay. I hope he knows what he's doing.
I guess
if he's staying just so they can go and sell everything that's worth selling and just leave him in charge of Fermin Lopez and friends, and it has a toll on him, and he continues to get the abuse in his private life and stuff that he took before. Just for his own mental health, he spoke very openly and very eloquently.
I know, but he would have known that when he decided to stay and when he had that press conference to announce that he was staying, not leaving.
If you're going
to
be rational about it, yeah, but he's doing this out of love for the club.
Yeah.
Which is a big
thing. I guess
big
he can always change still, but I mean, that would make even more
mess. No, that would be a mess. He's not going to do that.
Marcelo Gallardo is the latest name to enter the conversation as Milan's next coach. Gab, are you buying this one? And he's obviously getting sacked at Al Ittihad.
No, he just went to Al Ittihad, he got a ton of money, and then gets himself sacked.
Right? Yeah.
So, like, oh, look. Yeah.
He's still a good manager, though, right? For what he did at River.
You know what? He did everything at River. He had a million chances to come to Europe. He never came to Europe. Then he went and he chased the money in Saudi and was terrible. I don't see any appeal in this. This strikes me as the kind of thing is like his agent saying, like, oh, look, he's going to have to find a job. Hey, does he want to go back to River? Is there anybody in Europe? And then suddenly put him in at Milan. Again, I think it's too big a jump for him at this stage, given the experiences that he's been to. My understanding is it's still Team Mendes pushing Sergio Conceição.
Yeah, of course.
I think there's some people there who still really like Paulo Fonseca.
Yeah.
Who, of course, as you know, was linked with Marseille, met with McCourt and stuff.
Yeah, he's got a Marseille offer.
And then there's Ibra and his friend Mark Van Bommel, which, no. So, I don't know. I'm Team Fonseca. If you've decided 1,000%, Pioli's got to go.
Yeah.
It's not really a surprise, but because we knew it was going to happen, he knew he was going to get a new deal. But Rafael Varane announced he won't be back at Manchester United next season. He's a free agent. I thought his message was quite eloquent. Yeah. I liked hearing from him. It's kind of guy like, gee, here's somebody who's a normal person in addition to being a good footballer when not injured. I'd love to hear more from him.
He's one of the best. He's one of the good guys as well, one of my favorite. It's a shame in a way that those 2 years at United were not better. Injury, I think, hasn't helped. He missed pretty much 50% of the games that United have played. And that the team was not a bit better. So at times, I think he showed what a classy player and outstanding player he was, but maybe not enough if you're a United fan. I don't know. I would love to see him going back to France and just finish his career in Lens, where he obviously all started, where he's from, the north of France, and just like finish the cycle there. Or he might go to the... to another league, maybe to MLS with Lloris and Giroud, maybe to another French club, maybe to... I don't see him going to Saudi, for example. I mean, to be fair, I see him going back home. That's what I see him doing.
Well,
but I
Bonds can still qualify for the Champions League, right?
No.
No, right there. All right. No, but still, Joseph, come on.
Exactly. FIFA, whose Congress kicks off tomorrow in Bangkok, so Friday, have set up a working group to evaluate so-called out-of-territory games. What does this mean?
Well, this is the strongest sign yet. They're under a lot of pressure to allow, as we've talked about, to allow leagues to have regular season games outside of the national boundaries. Yeah. Basically, until this point, a whole number of entities had to sign off on it, generally on an exceptional basis, because you need... you know, the league hosting it, you need leagues, you need clubs, you need a whole bunch of green lights. So they want to, the idea is this something we want and can we create a pathway for it? They're obviously under a lot of pressure from Javier Tebas, first and foremost. The one thing I would say to this, I don't think there's, people have made a big, we've talked about this, like, oh, imagine the Premier League in the U.S., blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't think there's this great appetite for it because the bread and butter is still going to be domestic. I think it might suit some leagues more. Saudi, obviously, is the other obvious candidate. Saudi and the U.S. are the two obvious ones. I would be careful with how they codify it. And the reason I bring this up is, what would happen if, say, Liga MX says, okay, let's have regular season games in L.A.? I mean, at that point, bye-bye Galaxy and LAFC, because you could pack out 80,000 people in L.A., right?
Yeah.
So I think they have to be very careful with how this is done. And the tough thing, I think MLS is easily the most vulnerable to this. And the difficulty for MLS, even though is there are legal safeguards they've been taken, there's been talk about them maybe pursuing an antitrust exemption. They have to be careful because, of course, MLS already plays games in other countries, namely in Canada, where there's three MLS teams.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This, to me, seems like a big, big can of worms. Liverpool assistant Pep Linders is on his way to Salzburg. Jules, your thoughts? We've seen as like the secret ghost in the machine, man, Klopp and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, he also wrote a book, if you remember, with all about all the philosophy and everything.
The book, I think it's entitled, I Am Responsible for All of Liverpool's Success, not Jurgen Klopp.
I mean, he certainly believes that he's got a great future as a first team manager.
He's done it before, right?
Not an assistant. He's done it before. Not just an assistant of Jurgen Klopp or of somebody else. To be fair, I thought he would have gone for the Liverpool job and maybe by loyalty to Klopp, when Klopp decided to go, him and the rest of the staff followed. But it was no doubt for me that he would just not waiting for Klopp's next job to still be in his staff. I'm not surprised. It's Salzburg. You can start there, then go to Leipzig. We've seen a lot of that kind of Red Bull group process, if you want. So good luck to him. It's a good squad. It's a team that would be in the Champions League or should be in the Champions League with good young players. That I think would be a good learning curve for him, and then see how well he does and where he can go. But I wouldn't be surprised if he goes well to see my Leipzig, you know, once Marco Rosa leaves in like maybe 3 years or something like that.
So obviously they had trouble with the two guys who could, I forget their names out there, but they're random Austrians who replaced Jaisla at Salzburg. People who know far more about Pep Linders than me suggest to me that it's a slightly odd choice from the Red Bull organization perspective.
Okay.
Because if anything, you know, Linders, I don't want to say he's more defensive or more pragmatic, but Linders brought a level of help temper some of Klopp's excesses, over-attacking, over-pressing, whatever. And that really is what pushed Liverpool further to them winning the title and whatever. And so in that sense, maybe not a pure traditional kind of Red Bull type managers as we think of the stereotypes. But hey, look, maybe they're evolving too. Maybe Leinders coached that way when he was at Liverpool because he was with Klopp and he had those players. And if I was necessary, maybe it'll be totally different elsewhere. Who knows?
FIFA have also all but confirmed that the inaugural Women's Club World Cup will be held in January and February of 2026. But we still don't know where.
Well, if it's January, February 2026, I think we can probably guess it's not going to be in the US.
No.
As some people have suggested. Probably not going to be in Europe either.
Somewhere warm, you think.
Do you think maybe there might be some countries in the Gulf who might enjoy hosting this, who might have stadiums ready for it?
Yeah. 16 clubs, is that right?
It looks that way. There's still a lot of detail missing. And again, you got to go sell this thing to sponsors. Guys, it's May 2024. There's no reason why it should have taken this long. They said they're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
Infantino said they're going to do this like 4 years ago. I really don't understand why it's been so difficult. As well, there's been a lot of pushback on the Women's International Match Calendar as well. We're going to fit this in. I think it's good. I think it's the next evolution. Let's find out. Let's find out, are these European teams, are they better than the NWSL teams? How much better?
Yeah,
let's see that. I mean, this could actually be exciting because
it would be.
Maybe this is one segment of the world where the European teams are not so much better than everybody else, right? As will happen in the Men's Club World Cup, or maybe not, or maybe we'll find out that the NWSL teams stink relative to Barcelona, to Europe, Lyon, and City, whatever. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Me too.
More women's football. Should be an exciting final day of the Women's Super League season here in England. More exciting than the men's, frankly.
Not much more, but yeah, because they're still, you know.
Wow, it could come down purely to goal difference. So Chelsea beat Spurs 1-0 with a goal from Micah Hamano. And on the last day of the season, Aston Villa host Manchester City. Manchester United host Chelsea. Both teams are level on points. Chelsea's goal difference, plus 47. City's plus 45. This is echoes of Aguero, 93 minutes, 20 seconds.
It is, and on paper you have to say that Chelsea going away to United is the toughest fixture, more than City going away at Villa.
Reportedly, United are fifth in the table, and Villa are sixth or seventh.
A seventh, I think, yeah.
United have just won the FA Cup.
Yeah, exactly. So they will have a bit of that momentum going.
Hangover, you know, no. Mary Earps.
I mean, it would have been like, yeah. We thought this was all wrapped up. Before, when Chelsea lost away at Liverpool, and then City were 1-0 up against Arsenal and in control of that game, conceded two goals very late, 89th minute and 92nd or something, to lose that game against Arsenal, which meant that Chelsea could then come back with that game in hand. They did, and now it's an incredible last game for Emma Hayes' last game in charge at Chelsea as well, after 12 years and all those trophies, all those titles. And I think for City to win this title back after those years where they didn't and where Chelsea was so dominant would be very special as well. So we'll have to see.
I'm curious, given that United are kind of in the Spurs position right now, in the sense that they play Chelsea, so if they want to hurt Man City,
exactly,
they lie down. Are we going to get scenes like we got, you know, at the Tottenham Stadium? Or
I don't know. It'd be interesting. Like, are you watching? Right. It's a reverse.
Does it work differently in the women's game?
No. It'd be very similar. It'd be interesting to see what the crowd says. Fenerbahce presidential candidate, as his Yale dream, met Jose Mourinho for 2 hours last week. He says that he wants him at the club, especially if he wins the elections, of course. But even if he doesn't.
Yeah, I think there's three candidates for the election. They're going to finish second. I mean, I think potentially they could still do it. They're 6 points behind Galatasaray.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do it on goal different, but whatever. They're not going to.
It's very unlikely, yeah.
To finish second, they'll be in the qualifying rounds of the UEFA Champions League. Might that appeal to Jose Mourinho? Listen, I think at this stage, after Roma, he got the big crowds in the stadium and the hero and the passionate fans. He would certainly have that in Istanbul. Let's face it, he's also somebody who tends to revel in chaos, right? And that has kind of defined Turkish football, for better or for worse. I think it would be a fascinating story. I would want to make regular trips to Istanbul to go and witness this. I don't know if there's, I mean, what do you think, Julia? Is there a broader story of kind of like the level of clubs that would go for Mourinho at this stage of his career?
Yeah, I think right now it's only Saudi clubs, which we know are after him, and Fenerbahce, really. There was no, I think he tried to get involved in the Bayern race, for example, of shortlist, if you want, and others, considering how big the summer is going to be for managers with all those clubs back in Italy as well, who need a new manager. Right now, there's just nothing. There's no market for Jose Mourinho outside of Turkey and Saudi.
I still go back to this. I think where he could do a good job, if he wants to have a line, obviously Fenerbahce still gives you a line in Turkey,
yeah.
But it, you know, it is still, it's a big country.
And for them, it'd be a massive coup.
And it would be massive. I think the next step after that, I think international football would actually really, really suit him.
Yeah, I agree.
Celtic beat Kilmarnock 5-0 away to become champions of Scotland. Jules, they've won the title in 12 of the past 13 seasons.
That's true, although this one was, I thought, very, very interesting season because Rangers, especially after the arrival of Philippe Clement, pushed them all the way, and it looked at some point that maybe Brendan Rodgers would not do it and that Rangers would get the title. And instead, they obviously had that massive game away at Ibrox, which was an incredible second half. And they showed steel and really, a lot of character, Celtic, in this season. So well done to them. They've got a cup final to come to play on May 25th against Rangers. So we've got another Old Firm derby to come up, which they've all been great. And you know, this one was for the first time a different format of the league, in the sense that you had like a playoffs as well for the title and the European places, and then to go down, which makes it also very interesting. So well done, Celtic and Brendan Rodgers. Gab, Ligue 1 still doesn't have a new TV deal for next season and the two after, and some people say it's because Kylian Mbappé is leaving.
Yeah, they're wrong.
I think they're wrong
too. I mean, the reality is that the league said, oh, we want a minimum price of 800 million euros, which, if you look at the value of television rights, people need to wrap their heads around this, right? The Premier League down. Premier League rights today. Premier League, the most accessible product. Their domestic rights are less today than they were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same story around Europe. You do well if it's flat. They knew that Mbappe was leaving before.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a surprise. I just think leagues have to get used to the fact that television rights from legacy media, like the one we work for, aren't going to be worth as much as before because habits are changing, because the way people consume games. There's still a tremendous amount of interest in football, but there's other ways to do it. And I actually think if you look at the crowds in France, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the players coming through, this whole League of Talents concept, it kind of works. There are exciting players to watch, and people are into it. So I think it's a physiological change in the industry, but it's not something you can go and blame on Kylian Mbappe. And by the way, Kylian Mbappe can always just go to his ex-boss, who I believe happens to run a television network, say, hey, you want to fix this? Put some money on the table, Nasser. Jules, so much Manchester United on the show, but they tell us it drives traffic, so let's have even more. Anthony got a giant tattoo of himself on his back. And then he very cleverly shared it on social media.
Yeah.
Or somebody did. Now, it seems extremely tone deaf and stupid to me. And look, we're both inked. What would it take for you to get a giant tattoo of yourself
on
your back?
Nothing.
Lobotomy, perhaps?
I thought the rule, or the first rule, or maybe unwritten rule of tattoos was to never have yourself tattooed on yourself, if you see what I mean.
It's a bit creepy.
It is creepy, I think. And a tattoo of him scoring a goal or celebrating a goal?
No, I think it's a tattoo of him standing, showing off his pecs. Oh. In fact, I thought it was Cristiano Ronaldo.
I mean, it's worse anyway. It's bad. I don't know what to say. And he's got plenty of tattoos already, so I don't think he even needed a new one. But hey, if that makes him happy, I'm all for people's happiness. So if that makes him happy, Anthony, if that makes you happy, I'm happy for you. So go ahead. You know, you can also have your dog tattooed on yourself, like, you know, anything you want.
Eric Ten Hag's face.
Eric Ten Hag's face.
Since he made him a rich man. So,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Jesse March, remember him? He's the new Canada men's national team head coach, Gabby.
And there's a twist here. So first of all, Ortega handled Jesse. I think he's a good choice. I think even though he went to Princeton, he is a competent man.
Yeah.
Deserves a shot. And he's going to get a shot, obviously, this summer straight away. We'll see where he takes it.
A good squad as well.
Well, a good squad as well, yeah. What I take issue with is that he's not the Canada men's national team head coach. And this is, by the way, the only time you're going to hear this. He is the MLS Canada men's national team head coach. And the reason he's the MLS Canada men's national team head coach is because apparently the Canadian FA, which is called Canada Soccer, is in bad financial shape. And so to pay Jesse Marsh, they had to get sponsorship. And the three MLS teams in Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal all chipped in, apparently are paying part of his salary. And as part of that, it's like a sponsorship. It's like, you know, the... Well, it's like the League Cup is called something else. It's called the Carabao Cup, right? So he's the MLS Canada men's national team head coach. The reason this really annoys me, first of all, it's pretty pathetic and cheap from the owners of these three clubs. And I'm going to call them out. Joey Saputo in Montreal, who I have a lot of respect for what you're doing in Bologna, not a good choice. Toronto's owned by something called the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, some faceless corporation of sports executives and nerds. Fine, I don't know who to blame there. Vancouver... One of the owners of Vancouver is Steve Nash, who really should know better.
Yeah.
What, really? You need to promote MLS even more. Maybe because Canada have their own domestic league as well. The Canada Premier League is called something like that. That you need to put it on there. And what are you going to do?
Nobody's never going to mention that anyway.
I'm going to call out any colleague I see who actually calls it the MLS. Calls him Jesse Marsh, the MLS Canada men's national team head coach. No, anybody, if you do this, you're a tool and you're a loser.
They won't.
It's such a sad, sad way. MLS does not need this. This is so hokey. This is so stupid. And in fact, if I were MLS, for my friend Garber, I think you should go to them and say, guys, cut this out. Just take the MLS
this
off
is
it.
Silly.
We don't need this kind of cheap publicity.
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday.
We have an English champion.
We will have Premier League champions. Is it going to be Manchester City? Is it going to be Arsenal? Stay tuned. Find out. It's literally one of the only things that's still up for grabs in this so exciting season. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.